And he made it clear there were only two people here that he would talk to. Myself and Melissa here. Why?
He's my father.
Congratulations on Happy Face. Wow.
Thank you.
You've never played a character like this.
I never have a real life person like this, no.
What was it like putting on his skin?
Surprisingly simple in a sense, because he doesn't really have emotions. Not human emotions, at least. I mean, very, very kind of shallow type of a person who, rationalizes what he did, separates himself from that. And you always have to play a character from their point of view. But he really doesn't have emotions. So it's, I didn't have to really dig for these like deep things of, self-examination, because I don't think he does a lot of that.
But I would imagine as an actor playing somebody without, normal human emotion is gotta be a playground.
You could call it that, but it's, I probably could have gone and met him, which I usually do with real life people that I play, get to draw from them. But this is Melissa's story, not his. And I read her book and, remembered that those events from back then, the murders that he did. And that's what I drew upon. And what attracted me to this was the relationship between him and his daughter. It's her story, but they had a very loving relationship when she was a child. And then at 15, you find out your dad's a serial killer. And so what does that make you think about yourself? And how do you reconcile that? And I think that's the thing that sets Happy Face apart from other stories, similar stories. It makes it very interesting.
Yeah, it is a very interesting psychological, twist to it, because, people who are in that situation, and there's not very many, I would think, but they look for redemption for things they never did.
Yeah, you're talking about Melissa.
Yeah.
Yeah, in a sense, yeah. What does it make you think about yourself? And your life is turned upside down. Certainly there's a victim, and then, the victim's families and friends. But also the families of these monsters, what it does to their lives, turned upside down and shattered. And it really speaks to Melissa, what a strong person. I'd really admire her, how she's had to fight for normalcy, since she was 15.
Yeah.
And she's really turned it around and made lemonade out of lemons, as far as she's done a lot for advocacy and support groups of victims, families, and families of serial killers as well.
Yeah, she's a potent and powerful voice now, and God bless her, for making that change. And Dennis, it's always a pleasure chatting with you, no matter what we do. You're just a terrific actor, and one of my favorite guys.
Thank you, Tony.
This is just a gut-wrenching series.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Talk to me a little bit about your character playing the daughter of Happy Face.
This is a fictionalized story about the real life serial killer, the Happy Face murderer, and his daughter, Melissa Moore, who has in real life become an advocate for victims of true crime, their families, and then also the perpetrators' families of true crime. And really what we wanted to do is make sure that we show what an incredible voice of empathy she has become in the landscape and the machine of the true crime world. And it's really, I think, been a beautiful retelling of the uncomfortable coming out that she had to do, you know, coming out as the daughter of a serial killer.
Is there a bit more responsibility on your end as an actor to portray someone that's actually living and breathing than it is, you know, to do something, play someone who's fictional?
Well, you absolutely, when you play a real person who is in real life and living right now, you have access to them sometimes. And in this case, I did have access to her. And she also was an exec producer on the show. So she was a really helpful hand in making sure that not only were we getting the essence of her life story correct, but we were also being kind and respectful towards the victim, towards the victims who've been touched by the crimes of her father. One of her goals as an advocate is to really be careful about the victimization, the re-victimization of the victims' families when stories like this are being told. So she was an incredible resource to us for the world of true crime, and incredible resource, obviously, about her own life story.
Well, what do you think audiences are going to take away from watching Happy Face?
I think that people are going to be surprised at how this show tackles true crime in the way that it is not from the serial killer's perspective. It is not in any way glorifying him. And there is no violence on this show. There are no violent acts against women, I think, which we're very proud of. And it makes you think twice about what and how you would respond and behave if somebody in your family were to commit a heinous crime. Unfortunately, when somebody in your family does something like this, you take on the guilt and the shame from their violent act, even though you didn't commit it. It is a part of your family history, a part of your family legacy, and unfortunately makes you ask the question, is it a part of your DNA? Which is, I think, a question that we continually ask throughout the show.
What's he like?
Be glad you never have to know. If I don't deal with him, there is a family who lost a daughter who will never get answers.
You think that you're so much better than me. You don't see how we're the same.
You've been telling yourself a story about yourself, and now it's catching up to you.
You're just like your old man.
I'm not like you at all.
Just admit you did get cold feet.
Yes. No.
I don't even recognize you. Is the dream still alive?
I want to show my daughter something different.
You were the something different.
You were always magical. That was what we loved about you.
You're doing what you should be doing. What more do you want?
Tony, it's so lovely to meet you. Thank you for being here with me.
Wow, and it's lovely to meet you. You do so much, and my first question is, you know, directing yourself has got to be a little difficult. How did that work out for you?
You know, I think I believe a lot in text analysis. So for me, obviously, you know, I wrote the script. Nobody knows that story better than I do. And I think over so many years, over the pandemic as an actor, we started, you know, doing our own self-tapes and putting ourselves, you know, down. And we've had to become sort of our own best judges of what a performance actually looks like. So there almost wasn't enough time for me to think about whether or not I was doing a good job at both things, and just a lot of trust and faith. But I do think I'm able to compartmentalize differently than a lot of actors are, right? That I can look at a performance for whether or not it's telling the story, not whether my hair looks good enough or something.
Something I never have to worry about.
Well, we have people for that, right?
Yeah.
Beautiful. Looks great.
Yeah. Has directing been always something in the back of your mind?
No, I absolutely came into, I moved to LA. I knew I wanted to be an actor since I was tiny, tiny, tiny. Although when I look back on it, I always thought I wanted to be an actor, an author, or an artist. And so weirdly, directing is the thing that combines all three. But I moved to Los Angeles exclusively to be an actor. It was my first passion. I love it more than anything. But it got really old to be the person asking to tell the story instead of choosing which story was going to be told. And I really loved being able to step into the position of choosing to represent especially motherhood in a really joyful and positive light, because I hadn't seen it represented in a way that made me feel really good about the way Hollywood was showing us off.
You know, the story is about, you know, unfulfilled dreams. It's kind of a desperation story in a way. Where did this idea come from?
Well, I was going to move back home in the middle of the pandemic, back home to Portland, Oregon, from 20 years in Los Angeles as an actor. And the idea of giving up on my dream to focus on my children's well-being really freaked me out. And I realized there were so many of us who had gotten close or tasted a little bit of something or, you know, approached the truth of it and had to back off for all of these life reasons. And I think anytime we find ourselves in transition, we end up wondering whether what could have been, right? What was the way another path could have taken us. And I think that there's also a lot of pressure that's placed on us to achieve in a certain way, right? That success only looks like what someone else's version of success looks like. So I really wanted to tell the story of someone choosing what their own path was going to look like and being able to say, I've taken a step back, but I'm choosing to step back into it, even in middle age, even, you know, as a mother. And that idea of following your dreams brings such hope and passion that I just hope we never have to give up on that as part of our experience as a human.
Yeah, and I want to talk to you about something that probably no one will talk to you today about.
Great.
The score in this is so beautifully done and underlines what's going on screen so perfectly. I mean, it seems to be magic to me.
Oh, thank you so much for saying that. You know, I grew up doing musical theater, and I grew up, it's funny, I've been, you know, really trying to analyze where this love of music came from. And as a big feeling and emotional kid who needed a safe outlet, I was a really good child, I was a straight A student, type A all the way, but I really needed a place that was safe for me to let loose any frustrations or feelings or anger or just get to feel joy in a buoyant way. And music was always the way that happened. And so when I approached my dear friend Noah Harmon about writing the songs, and he did the entire score under it as well, there's not a lot of underlying music. It's mostly the, you know, these amazing indie rock songs that he wrote for me. I said, I don't want to write a musical. It's not that, but I really believe that music represents these moments in our lives and that sometimes I have to put on a song just because of whatever's happened in my day. And I loved being able to look at it from that slightly different perspective, like taking a genre that I loved more than anything, but making it my own and using the idea of music videos instead of bursting into song on the street really sort of appealed to my sensibility and the way I like to storytell.
I know exactly what you mean. I'm a musical theater kid myself. And
the best, isn't it?
It's such a different kind of drum that you walk to.
Yes, 100%. And you know, it was funny though, the other day my daughter said something really smart to me, that the music is now out on Spotify and Apple Music and all these things, which is the crate to have cut an album, like for a little musical theater girl to have actually accidentally cut an album making her first film. Don't get me started. But she said, you know what I really like about these is that these songs aren't specific to the story. They are emotionally, but that you can also pull them out and that they are, they don't use a name, for example, right? That they, it can exist on their own too. And any good song really is that little, it's a story in and of itself. And so these tiny little music videos that tell a different part of the story that emotionally augment Nora's journey. I'm really glad you like it. It makes me really
happy. I really do. And if it's on Spotify, I'm buying it.
Do it. It's right there. Nora, original motion picture soundtrack, Anna Campbell. It's crazy. I can't believe it's real.
Well, you should brag.
Sure. I'm not very good at it.
I'll brag for you.
Thank you.
What do you think audiences are going to take away from Nora once they experience it?
I really hope that people feel seen. I really think that this is a story about recognizing a different version of the human experience, right? Hollywood gives us so many opportunities to be like, oh, you should be falling in love and you should be worrying who you're gonna make out with next and you're gonna be, you know, you should be looking at it from these very unique kind of ancient tropes. And in the film, I really try to play with pushing you towards thinking that's the direction you're going, but instead keeping it grounded in a human reality. And what I've been really delighted with as we did our theatrical release and now we're heading into our digital is that people are saying, no. I always thought it was a movie for moms, right? About not giving up on our dreams and finding our selfhood while we're still being loving parents to these amazing tiny people. But, you know, men were coming up to me and non-mothers were coming up to me and they were saying, I see so much of myself reflected in those moments of private struggle in between. And I believe in, you know, finding hope and finding joy, but I'm not going to negate that there are difficult parts in order to be constantly pushing towards a life that does in fact fulfill us. So I just hope that every dreamer gets to see their own experience reflected at some point during the film.
Oh, we used to sing with Bianca Jones. Before she was famous.
Yes.
God, I love her.
I wrote that song. Wait, what?
Lulu!
Hey!
Hi, Corey.
How's my favorite rhino today?
That depends. Am I your favorite rhino?
Mm-hmm. And you're the only rhino I know.
Oh. Well, I'm having a bad day. I was trying to go to the park, but I think I'll just go home.
Wait! Don't have a bad day.
I'm already having one.
Well, you know what I do when I'm having a bad day. Start the day again.
Hi, Tony.
How are you doing? It's good to see you.
It's good to see you too. How are you?
I'm great. I've been just counting the days till I talk to you. I think the last time we talked was Doogie. I can never pronounce the last name of that.
Oh my goodness. It's been so long.
I know. You've grown up.
Thank you.
Has your voice gotten stronger, do you think, as you've gotten older?
Oh, certainly. It's definitely developed in its own way. I was on stage for 6 months with Cabaret, and I learned new parts of my voice that I had never worked on before. This project that we're about to talk about, Lulu is a Rhinoceros, I got to enter into a pop score, which is very fun. So I've learned that my voice contains multitudes, which is very fun.
Let's talk about this wonderful project because it is so deceptively simple and yet so deep in the messages it relays. And what an honor it must be to play Lulu.
Thank you. It really was. I'm always looking to play characters or tell stories that I haven't before, and I've never played a rhinoceros, so I was especially excited, but also really excited to tell the story of self-acceptance and kindness and being able to make it palatable certainly for younger audiences, but make it just as important for older individuals alike to watch this and take away some of our themes.
Talk to me a little bit about the character of Lulu and how you approached it.
Happily, Lulu is a rhinoceros. She is joyful. She is excited to start her day. And as our film lays it out, she is so inspired by Regina the rhinoceros. And that is someone who has invented this community unity day, where if you make kind gestures to one person, at least one person in your community, the whole world will be that much brighter. And as she is heading towards this community unity day event that she's very much looking forward to, outside forces begin telling her that she is either not enough or that she doesn't look a certain way, so she can't possibly be a rhino, and that she should change certain parts of herself to fit in a little bit more. And that is, I think, something that we all can relate to, that we start off knowing and feeling such groundedness in exactly who we are, but that can change with outside influences.
It can, and you know, just going day to day, you know, in our skin, it's hard. And then you see a character like this, and she gives you such hope for being who you really are inside.
Thank you. I absolutely felt like she changed me. I love stories that are able to reach into the deepest parts of you. And that is also something that we can do through song. I myself love breaking out into spontaneous song, and that is something Lulu likes as well, thank goodness. And we have great music that like Good Morning Beautiful You and The Perfect You Is You. And while certainly geared toward a younger audience, I remember singing it and going, oh, that's really sweet.
Well, it's such a, I've got the rap, but it's such a wonderfully done, and I said deceptively simple series, but boy, what a powerful voice you have. I wish you'd come out to Salt Lake City and do a concert for us, please.
Oh, that's very kind. You know, I've never been offered, so I'll keep that in mind. Thank you, Tony.
All right. You take care, and I adore you. Thank you so much.
Talk to you next time.
Look at this!
What's this magnificent mystery?
These are promising. Plus, yellow is my favorite color.
Ooh, yellow is my favorite color, too. Here we go. Beautiful! Yay! We found some pointy ears so you can finally hear like a rhino. They're totally rhino-tastic!
Thanks. It's not exactly what I pictured. But it stays on when I do gymnastics.
Thanks for watching Screen Chatter. If you'd like to catch up on all of our celebrity interviews and movie reviews, just log on to screenchatter.com. And you can also follow us on social media, including Instagram, X, and Facebook. Again, thanks for tuning in to Screen Chatter this week. We'll be back next week with another show. I'm film critic Tony Toscano, and I'll see you at the movies.